It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Hello there, boppers and film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosie. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Voice you heard is Kobe Slagle. Busy day today here at WFYI Studio, WFYI Headquarters.
Yes.
It's a wine fest tonight, so as soon as we're done with the show, Kobe and I are going to skedaddle down to Crown Plaza to
see you at the party.
See you at the party. There will be wine, there will be partying, there will be hopefully people donating to WFYI, and more than
That's
likely
right.
Linda Belcher will probably be there as well. Thank you, fans of Bob's Burgers.
And let's go ahead and throw this out there. For the... Well, regular listeners will know that we have pledge drives from time to time. And
yes.
During these pledge drives, we have on-air challenge grants brought forth to us from various corporations, nonprofits, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
Tonight, during Winefest, and basically this whole weekend, we are under a personal challenge from a very generous individual donor. And... the challenge is $50,000 coming to WFYI when we raise $50,000 this weekend.
Oh, by this weekend?
By the end of this weekend.
Okay.
I believe it's the end of this weekend. Yeah.
Very good. So now is the time, folks.
Visit us online, WFYI.org. Actually,
yes.
You're listening online, so you're already right there. So just go back to the main page.
Remember how you got here. Just remember that.
Retrace your steps back to the home page and make a donation.
Now we have we have a female voice in studio because we really need one to keep us in line.
And that's why I'm here.
That's why you're here. It's Keisha Dixon, the executive director of Asante Children's Theater.
Yes.
And there is a show that you folks had opened last night, Star Midnight.
Yes, and it was wonderful.
Excellent. And that is running through March 15th.
Yes.
And she's just hanging out. By the way, Deborah, we say hi. We got
yes.
it.
Yes, hi, Deborah.
We'll take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
So, got a lot to cover today, and I'll be talking about Star Midnight in a little bit. We do have a couple dead people we like, and this happens from time to time. The show turns into fresh air because of a special event happening on a Blu-ray release this week. I am playing a classic interview with Joan Hawkins, who is a an associate professor at IU Cinema. And I'm going to be replaying a conversation I had with her about one of my favorite films from the 1970s, now out on Blu-ray, because you need this film with that much clearer picture and tone. How's that for a cliffhanger? But now we're going to talk about what is new in theaters, what's new at the multiplexes. And I always remind you, you can always read, my friend and colleague Ed Johnson-Ott's reviews in Nuvo. You can go to nuvo.net or you can pick up an actual copy and don't mind having ink on your fingers. But opening today, I guess I have to ask this, and I'll open this up to the floor. Did anybody need a second best exotic Marigold Hotel?
Oh, my goodness. I didn't.
No.
No.
No. And she's the nice one. You know, the first one was...
That's probably as polite as you will hear something ever turned down.
That's kind of here. Downton Abbey-esque. Just like, oh, no.
Goodness, no.
No,
no, I did not.
I mean, the first one was fine. You know, you have the folks like Maggie Smith, Judy mm-hmm. Dench, Tom Wilkinson, directed by John Madden, who gave us Shakespeare in Love, among other things. And it was just a nice kind of, in the dessert world, it was a trifle.
But isn't that what happens? Sometimes it's really, really good the first time,
and you
want to go back in for a second.
See, now you sound like Mrs. Soucy at the house. Boy, this chocolate truffle is great. Yeah, give me six more of them. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So, it was a big hit, and they decided to make a second one. So, and by the way, fans of
did they decide to make a second hit or just make a second one?
Well, I didn't. To be fair, I have not seen that. Ed Johnson Ott's review is. I'm not going to read the headline. I can't read that. But he did say jokingly, next up, the best exotic Marigold hotel goes to Japan.
Mm.
So, if you're a fan of Dave Patel, this is your weekend because he's of course in Best Exotic Marigold Hotel Part 2. Still hoteling.
Still exotic.
still Marigolding. Anyway, but Dev Patel is in another film that, and this is the one I got to see that opened today, called Chappie, and it's from Neil Blomkamp, who directed his first film out the gate was the really, really well done District 9, and his follow up was the very disappointing Elysium, and this one kind of falls in between.
Okay,
it is set in South Africa, 2016, and you met.
Was District 9 set in South Africa?
Yes, it was. Okay. Well, because he is.
Okay.
Yes. Although, if you look at watch District 9, could be South Africa. Could be Gary. And if you watch
it. No, you did not.
Okay, I'm sorry. Baltimore? Is that, you know. And if you saw Elysium could be another planet, could be Hamilton County, where Matt Damon was living.
That was the Matt Damon one.
Matt Damon and Jodie Foster.
I'm thinking of the Tom Cruise. I'm thinking of
Edge of Tomorrow. But Elysium, yeah. It's like, well, Matt Damon apparently lives at 10th and Meridian. Maybe. So, yeah, I said it. I can't wait for your emails.
Okay.
But in this one, so it's 2016, and South Africa has created a group of robot police officers. Does this sound familiar to people?
Yes, it does.
A little bit?
Yes, it does.
They even remade that idea last year, I believe. And Dave Patel plays an engineer who's been experimenting and working on, not only do you have a police officer robot, but it has its own separate artificial intelligence.
Oh boy.
And so it can feel, it can have opinions, mm-hmm. it can emote, it can do more than just be RoboCop. And Hugh Jackman is in this film as well. He plays a rival engineer who and by the way, a film with Hugh Jackman and giant mechanical fighting machines. Real Steel, anybody? you see where I'm getting? These are going to be vaguely familiar sounding stories. And he has a creation that has not been put out the market yet, where you wear the helmet and you create, or you're able to move the robot by using your mind and your hand. So kind of like a video game.
Is this fourth dimensional?
It could be fourth dimensional.
Okay.
So what happens is, some low life criminals get threatened by a big time criminal to give them money, and they want to kidnap the engineer played by Dave Patel and get this artificial intelligence robot, which was initially damaged. The body was damaged, but the software program was intact, and they decided to create it. The one drawback is they have a week to gather money for this. For this payment, mm-hmm. The device, because it has artificial, almost human-like intelligence, it has to grow up.
Oh boy!
So and it does grow at a rapid rate. So it's not quite Robin Williams and Jack, mm-hmm. but it is raising a robot who eventually is going to become a full, powerful machine with emotions.
Constantly learning from its
constantly
experiences.
And you have the engineer who, by the way, tells. Chappie, the robot, that he is his creator.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if that's with a capital C or a lowercase c, but get ready to get hit over the head with some symbolism.
Right.
So, and then there's a fight amongst the criminals, especially there is a female one that becomes maternal by raising this robotic child that's going to grow up and become a big force of nature. Kobe has Kobe has a look of not sure if I'm going to see this.
Yeah.
Well, and they were watching it about halfway through. It felt like if you tried to combine RoboCop with Frankenstein, and where he's the creation is learning and wanting to learn and is torn because one of his quote unquote parents wants to teach him to be, you know, to make art and to be nurturing and to be caring. The other one wants him to shoot guns, throw ninja stars, and pull off a heist.
Ninja stars.
Don't you hate when that happens?
Right, right. At what point does he rebel?
What's a robot to do?
Sad trombone. So and so what I've noticed with Blomkamp's films is, although it worked with the same thing with Elysium, where you have a good idea and they're throwing a lot of stuff at you. And Ed Johnson Ott once said about a film, there are films that feel like you're getting hit over the head with a cardboard tube, mm-hmm. which is saying you're getting a message, but it doesn't hurt as much as a hammer. This is kind of in between there. Mm-hmm. So softer than a hammer, harder than a cardboard tube.
Oh, my goodness.
Which they don't want in the ad campaign. So there's a lot of ideas that are thrown at you, a lot of ideology thrown at you. And then the last third kind of turns into big, dumb action movie.
Okay.
So because Hugh Jackman, who gets a chance to play a villain, although he doesn't have a whole lot to do, there is a big fight. There are shootouts, of course, and there are slow motion action sequences because you have to have them in slow motion. And there is eventually going to be a showdown between artificial intelligence robot and no intelligence robot that just shoots things.
Kobe, I think I'm with you.
Just kind of.
He's talked enough now. I think I'm with you.
Okay. And a couple other things of note. Sigourney Weaver is in this, and she has even less to do than Hugh Jackman, which is kind of disappointing because if you have a Ferrari, you shouldn't leave it in the driveway. But the one thing that does work is the voice for the robot of Chappie. And it's voiced by South African actor and classic that guy, Charlton Copley, who was in District 9. He was the lead in District 9. He was in Elysium as the assassin. The thing he did right after District 9, because he was really good in that, he played Murdoch in the A-Team film.
Oh.
Right. One who wasn't Bradley Cooper or Liam Neeson and wasn't definitely not the guy not who was not Mr. T.
Okay.
So anyway, he's been working constantly since District 9, and it's a nice vocal work as far as learning how to speak from your quote-unquote parents, the artificial intelligence sound, the robotic voice, and then when he finally has feelings, especially in the last third, when things happen to certain characters in his life. It's just kind of jumbled all over the place. I wish it had tightened itself up a little bit more, maybe be more of a cardboard tube than a hammer, and I probably would have liked the film more. So, Kobe, I think we're saying this is my favorite adjective that you, when I review films, that you like to hear, flawed.
It's flawed.
It's flawed. So
it's also an art film.
It's well, no, not really, but it's okay. Also out in theaters today, we have Unfinished Business. You want to go on a business trip with Vince Vaughn, Kobe?
No.
Even if Tom Wilkinson's in it and he's really good.
Who's
Tom Wilkinson?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
I'm probably gonna know it when I see it here in a second.
Yeah, as soon as you're gonna go, oh yeah. The Full Monty, Michael Clayton in the bedroom, English actor, older gent. He was one of those guys, he was born 40. We know those people.
Okay.
And he's quite good. But I understand why he did this film. He got to be in an R-rated kind of slob comedy, which he's never probably, I don't think he's ever done. So he's in that. And those are basically the films. There are still some Oscar-winning films in theaters right now. Kobe, you have a semi-weird
I'm looking through his filmography here, and I
haven't seen
not,
anything. I bet there are films in there that your wife wants to see. Shakespeare in Love, Importance of Being Earnest.
Yeah.
You're like, no, I want to see that. Did you do an image search?
Yeah, still don't
ring a bell. That's fine.
Bells.
That's all right. Kobe, what is happening at your alma mater
this weekend? IU Cinema tonight. in a couple minutes here.
Road trip.
Yeah. If you're on your way down there right now, at 5:30, The Return to Homs, 2013 documentary. And then at 8 o'clock tonight, documentary from last year, Mala Mala.
Okay.
You know what?
Have not seen it.
Okay. Saturday, March 7th from 2014 at 2:30 in the afternoon, The Case Against 8. Follow that up at 5:30 with Slums, The Cities of Tomorrow. And then at 8 o'clock Saturday night, Reportero, 2012 documentary. Sunday, March 8th, 2015, Double Exposure, shorts program, silent live accompaniment. Kind of looks like that's a festival type.
Well, yeah, I know the they have the InLight Film Festival going on March 5th through the 7th at IU. So you can go to cinema.indiana.edu for all the festival times and information. Is that it? I think that's it.
That's it. And the IMA Winter Nights is over.
Sadly.
However, they still have some things going on. Tomorrow, they have in their cereal cinema.
It's actually breakfast food.
Yep.
Yeah, I saw this.
Cereal cinema.
How often do we get to actually say this and not make it a punchline?
Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo.
At 10 a.m. at the Indianapolis Museum of Art.
And then we have...
So, Kobe, what cereal goes with Breaking 2?
I don't know.
I have to work on that. Something more grain... more grain than sugar, maybe.
And then we're a little over a month away.
Yeah.
But Indianapolis Museum of Art film series, Music and Movies, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. Oh, April 10th.
Oh, we got... Oh, I think I'm doing a show.
Mark your calendars.
Man. Okay. And then also at the Indiana State Museum IMAX on March 8th at 7 p.m., the film Walter is going to be playing there as well. And you can read about that on page 20 of this week's Nouveau News Weekly. I'm going to jump format a little bit. I want to get to dead people we like because we never have time for dead people we don't like. Academy Award nominated costume designer Patricia Norris passed away this week. She was nominated five times. She was nominated for Days of Heaven, The Elephant Man, Victor Victoria, Sunset, and from 2 years ago, 12 Years a Slave. But she was also known for doing the costumes for such films as The End of Violence, Lost Highway, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, Bad Dreams, Little Nikita, Johnny Dangerously, wow, Scarface, thank you for that. Those outfits, Francis, Four Friends, The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh, a film starring Dr. J. And Metalark Lemon. Not kidding. Yes. So California Suite, Silent Movie, The Missouri Breaks, and others. And, of course, we want to give a big shout-out to Leonard Nimoy.
Yes.
Fine career of not just TV, of course, with Star Trek, but, of course, he wound up acting and directing a couple of the Star Trek films and was constantly working. And that's all you really ask when you get to be go as long as 83.
But it was interesting to hear about other activities and hobbies that he had. Did you notice?
Photography.
The photography.
Yes,
the
ladies.
Well-endowed, well
the realistic.
Yes, the realistic women.
Yeah. So
like myself.
You are a realistic woman.
Thank you.
And you are a natural woman.
Thank you.
As it is said.
Pleasantly plump.
Me too. That's why we're over here.
Yeah.
Kobe, stand next to us. We'll form the number 100. But I also wanted to mention he did, of course, direct. He directed Star Trek III, Search for Spock, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. That's the one with the whales. That's the one where they're in modern San Francisco. And then was able to do stuff non-Star Trek, which is nice.
Exactly.
He directed Three Men and a Baby, the courtroom drama The Good Mother with Liam Neeson and Diane Keaton, Funny About Love, Holy Matrimony. And yeah, it was a contract player in the 50s and 60s, did a lot of TV. Lynn, Emma, and I watched him last week because he was one of our favorite killers on Columbo, where he plays the surgeon. And I have to give a shout out to Chris Lloyd of the Film Yap for reminding me of this. He profiled this film in his old column series. That he starred as a sharpshooter, Leonard Nimoy, in a 1971 Yul Brynner Western called Catlow, which apparently is not all that memorable except for one scene where there's a fight scene between Yul Brynner and a naked Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness is right. You'll see more of Leonard Nimoy than you ever imagined.
Ew.
Wow. He took those photographs, too. Anyway, I was like, that's kind of brave because you didn't see too much, how should I put it, guy area
right.
in 1971. So then again, they didn't have the pause
so
button
where
in
do
1970.
I find this?
Actually, I think, Kobe, if you could double check, Warner Archives, which is the online online shop for Warner Brothers. It's one of those films you can't get in stores, or as Kobe likes to put it.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
Only you don't burn it. You buy it for like 15 or 20. But I believe it's a part of their series on Warner Archives. So anyway, big shout out to Leonard Nimoy and Chris Lloyd. Thanks for that image. I won't forget you for that. While we're in the shameless plugging department, of course, Keisha Dixon's here from Asante's Children's
Theater. Did he say shameless and Keisha in the same sentence?
There was a comma.
Okay.
And I was talking about myself.
Okay.
And then I was throwing it to you.
I'm just saying, I'm listening over here.
I know you are.
Okay.
Star Midnight is running at the Madam Walker Theater until March 15th. And once you've seen that show, then you can come see Star in the Door at Scottish Rite Cathedral, which is running March 13th, 14th, 20th, and 21st at 7:30 p.m. There's also a 3 o'clock matinee on Saturday, March 21st. And it's a comedy farce written by Jack Sharkey and Leo Sears, and it's directed by yours truly.
Shameless plug, shameless
plug. That's me. That's all.
Before tonight's show.
Yes.
At Star Midnight, we are doing a reunion performance of the crew from MLK in a Hip Hop World.
Ah.
These are alums that are now spread out all over the country working in the performing arts. But they've come back this year for tonight only to recreate what they did for MLK in a Hip Hop World.
Oh, cool.
It's full of original hip hop music, beats, and hip hop poetry. And I'm telling you, the story that they spin about MLK and about his philosophy for peace is amazing how they put it to work. So if you want to see that, you want to come out to the Walker tonight, Friday, March 6th at 7:40.
There you go.
Or should we make it 7:35?
You just did. Because we listened to you. I want to get to a couple of DVD and Blu-ray titles this week. New out, probably the most known of the new titles is Foxcatcher, which got an Oscar nomination for Steve Carell as well as Mark Ruffalo. It's a bit of a slug to get through based on the true story, but it's a well-made slug to get through of a very rich eccentric businessman who winds up financing potential Olympic wrestlers, including Mark Ruffalo and Channing Tatum. It's directed by Bennett Miller, who gave us Capote and Moneyball, and just an odd, not really love triangle, not really friendship, but just an odd triangle between two brothers and an eccentric millionaire, if not billionaire. So that is out there. The Gambler, which is not Mark Wahlberg doing Kenny Rogers, but it's a semi-remake of a James Caan film from the 70s.
Yeah.
And we have The Last of Robin Hood with Kevin Kline as Errol Flynn. Yeah, they talk about that relationship with that girl played by Dakota Fanning in this. Old titles on DVD and Blu-ray, The Grifters with John Cusack, Annette Bening, and Angelica Houston. Mm-hmm. Really fun crime thriller. Kobe, I know Bianca's wanting to get this. You can get these individually or as a collection, the Warner Brothers Musical Collection, Kiss Me, Kate.
Already has it.
The Bandwagon.
Don't think she has that.
Calamity Jane.
No.
And Singing in the Rain.
Got it. Singing in the Rain, brilliant.
Absolutely. Not bad.
Not bad. And for me, the big title, and I can't wait for the next paycheck to come so I can get this myself because they won't send it to me, but on DVD, on one Blu-ray, Blackula and Scream Blackula.
Oh,
Scream.
Yes. You were talking about this last year.
That's right. With a commentary by David Walker, who I'm trying to get on the show in the next couple of weeks. If anything else, it is a black vampire movie, but it's so much more than that because of William Marshall. I love William Marshall.
And they say that movie helped to cross ethnic lines.
Well, it was because when films like Shaft and you know, the action movies were being made, and then somebody had the idea of breaking into different genres, Western, horror, comedy.
Right.
And this was the first of the horror films. Mm-hmm. This would, of course, lead to Blackenstein and Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde. And
there's such a thing as called Overdue.
And Abby and Sugar Hill, not the Wesley Snipes movie, the zombie one from the 70s. And what makes Blackula great is the performance by William Marshall, who plays an African prince bitten by Count Dracula, and then his coffin is shipped to 1972 Los Angeles, and vampire hilarity ensues. But because Marshall was a classically trained actor, it reminded me of Charlton Heston with the sci-fi movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just treated the material like it was King Lear.
Mm-hmm.
And just anybody who crossed paths with him on screen, Marshall just wiped the floor with them. It was he's just fun to watch. And he plays it as a tragic character in the first film, where it is his loss. He sees a woman in the modern day world thinking it's his wife from his days of living.
Mm-hmm.
And in the sequel, he butts heads with a voodoo priestess played by Pam Grier.
Scream, Blackula, Scream. Yes.
Yeah. So a voodoo priest who is shunned from his family. Performs some black magic, brings William Marshall's character back to life, and Pam Grier has to save the day.
But it's his voice, too.
Great voice.
That's so dynamic, and it's almost like it bellows.
Yeah, and we were talking before the show, he had a theater company in the 70s. He did a one-man show of Thurgood Marshall for years.
And where's he from? Gary, Indiana.
That's why she's here. See, I did not know. I thought Gary, Indiana was just Fred Williamson territory, so that's
Gary,
very cool.
Indiana, my suburb.
There you go. And he also, I have a DVD of him playing Othello opposite Ron Moody. So, yes, Blackula and Fagin from Oliver in the same production.
Can you be more excited about this? I'm just wondering.
I can't hide it.
He's literally been talking about this since what, September, October?
When they announced it, when you first found out.
Standing up as he speaks
about it. No, my chair is elevated.
He found out about this like late last year, and it's like a Christmas countdown, and Christmas is here.
Oh my goodness!
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So because of this, I want to replay. We still have time to do it, right?
Yeah.
All right. This is my chat with. I was gushing a bit.
Yeah,
so,
we got time.
Okay. This was back in October. I talked with IU Associate Professor Joan Hawkins, who one of her fields of expertise are horror films. And, of course, IU had a fun African-American horror cinema festival with Ganja and Hess, J.D.'s Revenge, and Blackula. They showed Blackula on campus on Halloween. So this was my chat with Joan Hawkins.
They're predicting, you know, snow flurries here, so I'm hoping that people come out for Blackula tonight because it's a great movie.
Absolutely. Now, before we talk about the movie, what classes are you currently teaching, and when can film sociology make a road trip and watch?
I'm currently teaching a class called Nightmare Movies. That's Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2:30 to 3:45 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And we usually have our screenings on Tuesday night at 7:15 to 10:15.
Well, if you see old guys in the back row, it's probably us.
Okay.
and for the record, I am wearing my Blackula shirt. For this interview. So,
oh, good.
Now, I know this has been a part of a African-American horror series. I know there was Ganja and Hess as well as J.D.'s Revenge. How have the attendance been for those?
They've been very good. Ganja and Hess really had a wonderful reception. The film hasn't gotten as much coverage as one would hope it would have. So a lot of even, you know, diehard horror fans hadn't seen the full version. They'd only seen chopped up bits and pieces of it. So we had a really good turnout for that first night.
Is that even on, is that on DVD officially?
You know, I don't know. I know that it came out on a very poor a very poor video a few years ago. I'm going to just check now to see if it's out on DVD.
Because that's one that's always one that I've always heard about, have not seen, and you know, going on Amazon, that's that, you know, the prices are too big. But yeah, I don't think there's been an official one on that.
Yeah, it's been, and it's just it's such a beautiful. I mean, just visually, it's a beautiful film. But then it is just so interesting, and the way that it interacts with the Black Church is really fascinating.
And I know J.D.'s Revenge, I believe, is the film Glenn Turman did after Cooley High, and that's one of the better horror films of the so-called blaxploitation genre.
Yeah, it's true.
For me, the top is Blackula. I think that one's the best by far.
No, it's a great movie.
Well, and I keep telling people, one is the two things it has going for it is one, the treatment of the lead as a tragic figure,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that's really ever been covered. They do it a little bit in Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula, as far as love loss and a sad figure. And the other is the performance by William Marshall, who I think is incredible in this film.
I know, he's wonderful in this film. And, I mean, just the voice alone is enough to send shivers down your spine.
Well,
amazing.
You know, I keep telling people, this was a classically trained New York stage actor, and he just wipes the floor with anybody who crosses his path.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's really true.
How was it getting this series organized, and how many of the people involved had seen these films?
I don't know if one of the people who was very involved in helping to organize it was Terry Francis, who's a recent hire, and then she was working with the Black Film Center Archive, and so which is one of the best and biggest black film archives, I think, in the entire nation, certainly within the state of Indiana. And it and so they had the promotional materials there. And it was she and Michael Martin and Brian Ganey who were doing the yeoman's work, and then they got the IU Cinema involved. And I know, like, I had seen Ganja and Hess, and I had seen Blackula, but I had not seen J.D.'s Revenge before we showed it, which was, so that was a nice thing for me. I think that Michael Martin had seen all three of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know, and I know the last two were, MGM had put out a Soul Cinema collection, so those mm-hmm. were fairly, you know, I don't think they're in print now, but they're still, I mean, you could go to shops and find them, but there was a period where they were readily available.
Right.
Going back a little bit, I mean, obviously, what we call the so-called blaxploitation. I say so-called because Fred Williamson always said, "My check's never cleared," or "My check's always cleared. Who's getting exploited?"
Yeah.
But it proved that there was a market for making films towards that audience. And I know once the success of Shaft and Superfly, they started making genre films of all kinds geared toward the African American audience.
Right.
Do you remember how far it was when the horror film started to pop up?
Well, Blackula was one of the first ones, I think. And it one of the things about Blackula is that they went to a lot of trouble to ensure that there would be an audience for the film. And so, I mean, one of the things about Blackula is that there is there's this kind of the film begins with a nod toward the history of slavery. So the idea is that Blackula and his bride, his black queen, come to see Dracula, hoping that they can engage Dracula in donating money and to helping them wipe out the slave trade, only to find out that they've been cruelly tricked. And so, you know, Dracula imprisons Blackula and takes his bride and then locks him up for a while, and then he's sort of resuscitated. But when they did the original promotion for Blackula, one of the things that they did to ensure that there would be a large audience for it was to mention slavery prominently on the poster, and to let people know that this was going to be a blaxploitation film in the model of blaxploitation films, but it also was going to have this kind of more serious tie-in.
So, yeah, a little hidden, I mean, not hidden, but a message right off the bat.
Right, exactly.
And then I think once, you know, even when we get to the stereotypically gay antique dealers in modern day Los Angeles and the pimps and the go-go. I mean, and it's, you know, the thing about the blaxploitation films was on one side, it got a lot of actors and actresses a lot of work. And on the other side, they weren't always the best drawn characters.
This is true.
and that's why I think even though those stock characters are there, but it's balanced by the fact that William Marshall treats the material like it's King Lear.
Right. And also the woman who plays his bride is quite wonderful, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a role that wasn't a prostitute, wasn't a damsel in distress.
Exactly.
I mean, wasn't really the quote-unquote damsel in distress. She had a little bit to work with.
Right. No, she had actually quite a bit to work with. And the fact that, you know, once she, you know, in sort of a typical vampire movie fashion, when she realizes that this Blackula figure is in love with her because he thinks that she reminds him of this woman that he lost, and he thinks that she might actually be this, you know, former African princess. That's always very, you know, that's very wonderful to think that you were a princess in a former life, or that this guy thinks you're a princess. It's great.
Exactly. And so and it also has the some of the stuff you expect from a vampire film, you know, like the transformation from man to bat, as well as you can for a low budget 1972 film. And of course the attacks. I think there's even the great shot of, you could tell somebody is sitting either in a wheelchair or on a gurney.
Right.
As they're flying, stalking after somebody. Do you need some water?
Yeah, I think I've got some here, actually. Thank you.
Well, take a drink. It's okay.
Okay.
You're listening to Film Sociology here on WFYI. I'm here with Joan Hawkins, the Associate Professor of Communication and Culture at Indiana University. Tonight, if you're heading down south, and you really should, because it's too cold to trick-or-treat, but you can, you know, take the kids to go see Blackula. I showed it to my daughter, and she's fine. So go check that out. Now, this also spawned Scream Blackula Scream, I think about a year later, Pam Grier, and
right.
And also it tackles in the art of voodoo, which you know, has not always had the best representation in pop culture.
Yes. Yeah, no, although it's interesting because there's a whole long line of voodoo films that also treat, you know, issues of Black cultural politics. So even going back to something like I Walked with a Zombie, or there was another one that was very, you know, old film, but that was dealing with issues of slavery, that was dealing with issues of the way that that Western religion and civilization was sort of foisted upon Black cultures, and Black cultures were lost in the process. It's, horror has always been a very interesting kind of an umbrella genre through which or under which people could look at very, very serious and very provocative themes. And precisely because it is a genre, you know, because these are genre films and because the genre is considered to be fantastic, you can end up tackling things that have a lot of social sensitivity in ways that you can't in just a straight movie. And the voodoo films and horror are no exception. White Zombie is another one where you've got, actually it's a zombie film, but where you've got these zombied characters who are made zombies via voodoo cults, and then they're forced to work in the sugar plantations.
Have you seen Sugar Hill?
Yeah.
That's the first thing I thought of, was it was a revenge film. It just happens to have zombies involved in it.
Right.
So. Now, have you seen most of the quote unquote black horror films of that era? Because I'm patting myself on the back. I own a lot of these in my collection, whether it's Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde, Blackenstein, Abby, which was the other William Marshall film that he appeared in. I think those kind of dip down as far as quality and craftsmanship, but was there still messages coming from those films as well?
Yeah, I think that you're hard pressed to find a horror film that isn't just made for humor. I think that you're hard pressed to find one that doesn't have some little bits in there. And the fact that these films were all being made in the 1970s, when when civil rights was still very much an issue, when people were trying to figure out what the kind of post-immediate moment of civil rights was going to look like. We'd had, you know, Night of the Living Dead in 68, in which you had that amazing performance.
Yes.
Of a, you know, a black man who survives the zombie threat only to be killed by these white vigilantes in the morning. I mean, I think all these horror films have really made kind of interesting contributions to the dialogue about race in the country.
So what films have you talked about in your class?
Well, so in my class, I'm having them go see Blackula tonight.
Good.
And they went and saw Ganja and Hess when we showed it before. But we've been, one of the things that my class is doing is taking a look at the relationship between films that are clearly horror films or get positioned as horror films and films that don't necessarily get positioned as horror films. So we watched The Premature Burial, for example, and then we watched the Dutch film The Vanishing, which was, you know, marketed as an art film, but which deals with this woman who's kidnapped and then buried alive.
That just got reissued on Blu-ray this week by Criterion.
Yes, and it's just, and I would encourage people to take a look at it because it's just a phenomenally well-made film. It's too bad he remade the film later,
which I saw in college. Yeah,
yeah, which wasn't nearly as powerful or as strong, and I'm not quite sure what made him decide he needed to do that, but. But the first Vanishing is just, it's a really amazing film, and it's this amazing film about obsession, because the woman who's abducted, her boyfriend, just, he can't go on with his life until he knows what happens to her. And there's this one very chilling moment in the film where he even says that between getting her back, or, you know, being able to forget her and move on with his life and have a happy life, or finding out what happened to her, he would choose finding out what happened to her. And so at the end he does in a very kind of gruesome way. So we've seen, and we're just finishing up now, a kind of a slasher cycle where we saw Nightmare on Elm Street this past week. We watched Candyman, which is another film about race politics, which is very interesting. And we watched American Psycho, which is one of those films that sits on the border between, you know, an art film and horror films.
When you mentioned that, I just saw Nightcrawler today, and that's kind of horrifying in its own way. And another one that I guess that you could probably throw in that is Taxi Driver.
Yes, absolutely. Taxi Driver really is. I mean, that scene when you first see the taxi driving along and all the steam is coming up from the gratings in New York City is just very, very, very frightening.
Yeah, I think folks got to know sometimes you have a better chance at seeing a psychotic taxi driver than you do a slasher in a mask.
I know, I think so. I've been in a cab with a couple of psychotic taxi drivers.
I guess what were some of the horror films you enjoyed watching as a kid?
Well, I was funny because I was just having breakfast with somebody today. I remember this was way back in the day when I was like 9. I remember just watching TV and stumbling across James Whale's Frankenstein. And that was, I think, the first film that I saw that I recognized as clearly being a horror film. And I was just, I was just transported. I just loved it immediately. And then as I got a little older, I had a very special fondness for the Val Lewton films. So Cat People, I Walked with a Zombie, The Curse of the Demon, all of those films that I thought were just wonderful. I loved Psycho. I loved some of the really kind of weird 1950s films like Carnival of Souls. I remember I saw that when I was in college and was just blown away. There are very few that I've seen that I absolutely haven't liked. I like The Uninvited, that Ray Milland film.
I have that on Blu-ray.
Another great film.
There's a horror show host on MeTV, and it's called Spanguli, based out of Chicago, and he showed The Uninvited a couple weeks ago.
Oh yeah, no, it's such a good film, and it's not shown as much as it ought to be.
No, it's a mature haunted house story.
Yeah, Yeah. And I heard today from somebody that that was actually like the first studio-made haunted house film or studio-made ghost film that wasn't didn't have like a major comedy component to it, that it was one of the first ones that was made that was actually made just straight.
Well, it's funny you mentioned it, because especially if you're doing, since we started with talking about African-American horror films, there was usually the stereotypical Rochester character who would, you know, eyes would bug out and he'd go through the wall and that the shape of the body as he ran through the wall. Yeah, exactly. That's, no, this was a serious, mature haunted house story.
Yeah, no, it was great. And there's also The Haunting of Hill House. That's another one that's just wonderful, wonderful film.
And I know, I think they just reissued like half a dozen Vincent Price films on Blu-ray.
Yeah, oh gosh, yes, they're all coming out now, and they're beautiful things. They're just gorgeous films.
Where, if you don't mind me asking, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Did you have a local horror show host as a kid?
Yes, we had Bob Wilkins with Creature Features.
Okay, cool. I grew up in Michigan where we had Sir Graves Ghastly out of Detroit. And then, of course, Sammy Terry down here and Svengoolie in Chicago. So what day or night was the show on?
So Creature Features was on Friday, and when as it got going, it was on Friday and Saturday night.
Oh, lucky you.
And we would have, and it was great. I mean, they would do these, they would do double features. And it was one of the first places where I got this notion that has been captivating me forevermore about kind of paracinema. So the way that these kinds of B-horror films would get paired in production catalogs and collector catalogs with things like The Checker's Speech and Marijuana and Reefer Madness and those things, because they would show all that stuff on Creature Features. It was you never knew what you were going to get. I mean, you knew what the two main films were supposed to be, but then besides that, it was anybody, whatever he had that he wanted to show. It was great.
Yeah, that's kind of sort of a lost art. And now those films, you mentioned those titles, and those are usually the ones that nobody knows who has the rights for it, so they just slap it on a DVD and sell it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and it sounds like from your class, you're not showing the dumb dead teenager movies. Nobody's half dressed while checking for noises down the hallway.
No, no. Although,
or they stop and they realize they have to get undressed in order to find out what the noise is.
There was a lot of laughter during certain scenes in Nightmare on Elm Street, but no, we haven't had any half dressed people walking down the hallway.
Okay, that's fine. Well, it is an institution of learning, so you got to what not to do. So, Joan, thank you so much. Happy Halloween and enjoy Blackula.
Halloween. Oh well, thank you, and happy Halloween to you.
And that was my chat with Associate Professor Joan Hawkins from IU Cinema. That was from last October, because we were talking about the film Blackula. And yes, I'm very excited. Blackula and Scream, Blackula, Scream.
Are on Blu-ray.
One Blu-ray. One single Blu-ray. So excited.
Can you say it one more time?
One more time.
One more time.
So anyway, that is out. Can't wait to watch that. Keisha Dixon is hanging out with me. Very, like all the women in my life, very patient.
I'm trying. But don't
so
push
am
it.
I.
Don't push it.
Yes, dear. Anyway, she over at the Asante Children's Theater, Star Midnight is happening at the Madam Walker Theater Center, running through March 15th. And it's a familiar story, but a different arrangement of Snow White, right?
Yes, Miss Asante wrote this play. And she wrote it because of one of our, as a matter of fact, the girl who is Star Midnight in the performance was the inspiration for this piece. And when she came to us when she was 8 years old, she's 30 now, 31. She came to us when she was 8 years old, and she had been bullied in school because of her color. Her skin color is rich, rich dark. Mm-hmm. And people were just talked about her being ugly and being not fun to look at or not good to look at. And from that, we had to then build up her esteem and confidence about her color and teach her how to be prideful about that. From that time, in the background, this story has been percolating. And finally, 2 years ago, the script was finished and we brought it to stage. We're bringing it back because of the bullying and how so much bullying is going on, not only because of color, but just because of differences that people are kids and adults are taking it upon themselves to beat and trouble and cause suicide to happen amongst young people who cannot deal with being ridiculed because they're different. So that's why we're doing Star Midnight.
Cool. So tell us a little bit. I mean, it follows the Snow White format.
It follows the Snow White format in such, instead of the mirror, mm-hmm. we have Amir. Character named Amir. Mm-hmm. Instead of the seven dwarfs, we have seven nerds. And they are dancing.
Two here.
They are dancing nerds. And whenever anybody punks them or talks about them, they break out and dance. And they are fabulous hip-hop dancers. We have jocks. And instead of the queen of mean or the mean witch, mm-hmm. the mean lady, we have mean girls. So there's
not,
Mean
Not
Michelle.
Written by Tina Fey.
No.
Not starring Lindsay Lohan. Right.
No, we have Mean Girls, and it's a crew. It's Mean Michelle and her crew. And so they kind of cause a little havoc on screen, on stage,
mm-hmm.
Amongst it. So those are the similarities.
So, it sounds...
And there's a grandmother character that really dogs out Star Midnight, and it's her grandmother.
Wow.
Yeah.
Working together.
Okay.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. And who did the score for this?
Oh, Vincent Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Vincent Howard is our musical director, and he put the music together.
We got you in there, Vincent.
Deborah is a co-director, and we have our co-director and choreographer in from L.A., ACT alum David King Orr.
Oh.
Yes, so it's really a great show, and I hope people come out to see it. After that, we are pushing auditions. We have auditions coming up for our next session of ACT Academy.
Mm-hmm.
That will be March 28th. Can I give out a number?
Yes, go right ahead.
317-654-0264. Or if you can't remember that, just go to the website www.asante, A-S-A-N-T-E, children's with an S, theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E,
R-E,
dot O-R-G. Of course,
proper.
If I had said
theater,
you might not have spelled it correctly.
And I'm sorry, it's not theater.
Yes.
Please. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that's a universal thing.
Well, theater, if you're in the Midwest, maybe.
Yes, but even though we're geographically on the side that won, it's not like you're from the South. Anyway, sorry, that's
a
different rant of a different.
Well, I can go there.
Now, so you have auditions coming up, and it's a tribute show, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's preparing for the tribute show to Quincy Jones. The name of the show is called Q.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
See, earlier we were talking, and all she had to say was Quincy. So so this is the here. Yeah, Kobe and I are getting ready. This is the one up portion of the show. You took a class and got more real time with Dr. David Baker than I.
Mm-hmm.
But I, of course, said I had more quality time with David, and that's not entirely true. Kobe hit it. But I got to interview Dr. Baker for Downbeat, and mm-hmm. it was about Freddie Hubbard.
Okay.
And when I got on the phone with him, and I introduced myself, and he went, "Yeah, I know who you are. I've heard
mm-hmm.
your show."
Mm-hmm.
And I turned into a teenager. you did? Really? Really? You like? I play jazz artists doing the blues sometimes on my show. Uh-huh. I do that. I hope you like that. And so, and enough time has passed, so I think he'll cut me slack on this. So as he was, I was talking to him about Freddie, and he said near the interview, he said, "Freddie Hubbard was the best arranger I ever heard." I'm like, wow, great quote. So I get that. We get done with the interview. 10 minutes later, he calls me up and he says, "Look, I hate to do this, but I would like, if you could, to alter one of my quotes, mm-hmm. change it." And I said, "Well," and then like mm-hmm. all the journalism classes come rushing back into my brain. I'm like, "Well, what did you want it changed?" And he goes, "Could you say that Freddie was one of the greatest?"
Mm-hmm.
Because when Quincy reads this,
right,
he's going to call me up and give me grief. And I said, I'll do it on one condition. What? Tell Quincy about my show.
Okay.
Or Peggy or Rashida.
Mm.
Anyway, so, well, cool. That's that. Cobe, you should audition.
Quincy spoke at my graduation ceremony.
Oh, wow.
You win.
Okay.
Did you bring your drum kit that day?
Can I sit in? Hey, Quiz, can I sit in?
I'll accompany you.
Need a conga player? I can do it. Right, man, I've always got them.
Well, then I think we're going to call you in, Kobe, once we start working on this show. How about that?
All right.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
See?
Don't talk smack now. I will hold you to it.
All right.
She'll find you where you work.
Cool.
So, Keisha, what films have you watched recently? New, old, doesn't matter.
Oh, me?
Yes, you. You're on the film show.
I know.
You knew this question was coming.
Oh, my gosh. But I said,
I didn't want you to binge watch last night.
I got to get this in.
Like you did.
Right.
Give me a moment. Let me think about it because I just went to the movies.
Okay. Well, just while you're thinking, just a reminder, Star Midnight is running through September or March 15th, I should say, at the Madam Walker Theater. So you can go check that out. 654-0264. So for ticket information, there is a 4 p.m. matinee on Sunday and a 4 p.m. matinee on Sunday the 15th. So.
Was that my time?
Yeah, did I get your time?
No. No.
Wow.
I know. I hate to be put on the spot like this. And the sad thing is I just went to the movies and I really did like it.
But it was that memorable.
Yeah, I know. It was with my husband and my son and his girlfriend, and it was really good, and I did want to see it, and I thought, okay. And now here you ask me, and I go totally blank.
This is last week?
No, I'm not going to say that.
Oh.
That would really make me look bad.
Yeah, so a month ago.
Okay. No, it wasn't a month ago because it wasn't out.
2 weeks.
It's one of the ones that's been, you know, it's recently released.
Okay. was it? All right, here we go. Was it The Lazarus Effect?
No.
Was it Jupiter Ascending?
Dare!
So the one with Channing Tatum with weird ears and Mila Kunis.
Yes.
All right, see? Problem solved.
I know.
You liked it?
It was okay.
It was all right?
Mm-hmm. It was okay.
Big sci-fi epic from the Wachowski siblings. But the fate of the world is in Mila Kunis' hands when she's not hoiding barrels of Jim Beam on television. Yeah.
And name another one because I did go see something else.
Still Alice.
No.
Mr. Turner.
No.
McFarlane USA.
Uh-uh.
I love she tells me to throw titles at her and then I get this audible disgust.
She's dismissing those like you're asking her to see them and she doesn't want to see them.
I know.
It's only certain things that I like to go see, unlike my counterpart, Miss Asante, who is like notorious. Every Friday she's at the movies.
Yeah?
Yeah, she sees everything. And of course she's, Keisha, you should go. Okay, I will. But I like animation,
mm-hmm.
and I like sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
I do like mysteries. I do not like horror.
Okay.
So I don't like things that cut them up. But, okay, it's coming to me now.
What?
You saw the SpongeBob movie.
No.
Wow, that was hard.
Animation.
This picture, okay, there was an English gentleman. Okay, I've got to remember it here. He had he was mentoring a young guy.
Kingsman.
Yes.
Wow, very good, Kobe.
Should we play a game? Okay, now, I really liked the Kingsman, and I was excited about seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
That scene where they had the fight in the church.
Oh,
my God.
With Freebird playing, yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I was not ready for that.
No, nobody was really for that.
I was not ready for that. And Samuel L. Jackson, how many times did he change clothes? And how many colors did he wear? And why did everything have to match? I was watching that instead of everything else.
Well, he had to be his version of a Bond villain, that's all. With a lisp, apparently.
With a lisp. That lisp would come and go.
Something slightly different, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, Kingsman, if you're into over-the-top, I mean, this is from the director of Kick-Ass, mm-hmm. and it's really over-the-top, and without giving anything away, really nice use of the song Pomp and Circumstance.
Definite.
All right, I think, Kobe, do we have some words to live by?
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Ladies and gentlemen, Star Midnight is at the Madam Walker Theater through March 15th. 654-0264 for ticket information or go to Asante Children's Theater with Ari.org. Keisha, thank you for hanging out.
Oh, thanks for having me, and sorry for the brain Brain.
Do you listen to the show? You're fine.
Okay.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Hope to see you all at Winefest and Star on the Door at Scottish Rite next week.
All right.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.